Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We are going to talk about Tom Brady's suspension being reinstated. I'm one of those that on this story, when I heard the news this morning, it was immediately a win for Roger Goodell. Most people don't like Roger Goodell, most fans. Most of you are sick of this story. Most of you don't care. However, we're in the unique spot here being in Arizona that with the Cardinals opening against the Patriots, there are Cardinal fans that are jumping up and down for joy. I myself look at it and say it's really too bad. I'd rather see a game that has the best quarterback in some people's opinions in the history of the NFL. Others would say he's top five. Wherever he is, I would rather see the best of the best rather than Jimmy Garoppolo on Monday Night Football. Or maybe it's going to be Sam Bradford with what's going on there. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. It's a four game. They're putting it back into play. The NFLPA can petition this, and there's still going to be a lot of legal ease. Tom Brady's salary has already been put out there by Darren Revelle this morning, how he's taken such a massive pay cut. It's less than $1 million it's going to cost him. But again, if you're just the diehard of diehard Cardinal fans, you're jumping up and down for joy because you're now going to circle that game and say, well, we should win that. I mean, don't you think, Eric, that if the Cardinals are playing New England at less than full strength right off the top, that they should win that game?
Especially since it's in Glendale.
Yeah.
It's not in December in Foxborough. It's in the nice, friendly confines of University of Phoenix Stadium. And, yeah, it's a huge advantage if Tom Brady doesn't play.
Yeah, if Tom Brady doesn't play, you're beating a team at less than full strength.
And it's a shame because people that were looking forward to seeing Tom Brady play now will not get to see him.
Wasn't it the Steelers game this last year, the Roethlisberger?
Yep.
And we ended up seeing
and the Cardinals ended up losing that game.
Ended up losing that game, but it was on the road. But, you know, you don't want to play a team without having their best players on the field, especially when it comes down to something legal, right, like this. Now, you could say Tom Brady's a cheat. That's the easy way to go. We can go back and forth on this, but I'm not going to take this pen and gouge my eyes out today over this topic.
Yeah, Landry Jones was the quarterback that day.
It was Landry Jones and Michael Vick, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
Mike Vick was out there. It was Landry Jones. But this is a win for the NFL, and I just don't know if can the league and Tom Brady look at each other eye to eye. And we have Peter King on every week during the regular season. I actually thought about calling Peter today. I don't want to burn Peter on the week of the draft with this, because the question is really going to come down to, can the NFL and Tom Brady look at each other in the eye and say, let's figure this out for the betterment of the game. Because it's not good for the NFL to open their regular season on national television, on NBC, without having that guy on the field. It's not. The Cardinals, on their own merit, are not going to drive the number as hard as they would be driven by having Tom Brady on the field. Now, there's part of me that says, I don't think it's any coincidence. It's not like the league woke up this morning and said, oh, well, I think today we should probably sit down and figure out Tom Brady. So this story broke like an hour ago. So on the East Coast, it's like 10 a.m. I don't think they just walked in today and said, no, what they did is we're going to just dominate media from every angle here the week of the draft, because that's who we are. We're very strategic. We plan this stuff out, and that's what they do. So you release this on a Monday morning to just take the whole news cycle and spin it out of control and make it all about your league. And beyond that, I have to wonder, did NBC not have any idea that this was coming? I mean, the business partners, if you're in a business partnership and you know there's some bad news coming, why would NBC schedule New England with the thought of, well, Tom Brady's not going to be there. We really want to focus on Jimmy Garoppolo. Is it because over the next 4 months, we're going to hear, well, he's not going to play. Well, there was another meeting. Well, he may play. Well, he may not play. And this will come all the way down to the start of the season. And the answer is yes. That's why they did this. It's really not that hard to look at. The Patriots in Vegas this morning, the odds of the Patriots were at 6-1. And that was before the news broke. I mean, we could put Jimmy Vaccaro on today and say, what's the impact of this? But it's April 25th. So get back to me when we get around, I don't know, August 25th, and we'll just see what happens. This will be a story that will, again, dominate the offseason, hold fans hostage. Is it good for the – and I just look at on the field. On the field, it's fine if you're a Cardinals fan, jump up and down and be excited. I'd rather beat a team at full strength with one of the best players than have a backup quarterback over a legal situation pop into play. That's me. Casey Jacobson's going to be with us in a couple minutes. We're going to talk about Steph Curry's injury today. The Lakers are just jacked up. I thought things were jacked up here in Phoenix. I mean, really, if you look at two brands that never found themselves in the ditch, the Lakers and the Suns were two of those franchises. And the Suns have always chased the Lakers. Last time I checked, the Lakers have a lot of hardware hanging up in their trophy case and in the rafters. They've owned Phoenix in the way of titles. Just the way it is, you may hate the Lakers, it's a fact. But both these franchises are so jacked up. Why do you wait to fire Byron Scott? Unless it was like they got together with him yesterday morning and they had a meeting that just didn't go well and they're like, you're done. Why would they do that? That makes no sense. Tom Thibodeau, would Tom Thibodeau say, you know, I think I'd rather be in the Lakers building than the Timberwolves? No offense to all two of you Timberwolf fans that live out here in Arizona, but come on. Would they rather have had a shot at Scott Brooks so they could have had a real run at Kevin Durant? I don't know. It just, you fire a guy, and so now you hear Kevin Ollie's name or Derek Fisher's name or Luke Walton's name. And it's kind of like, really, that's the direction you're going to go. It's fine if you're here in Phoenix because we haven't been able to figure out here for 6 years. And the Lakers have been bad at the same time. Imagine if the Lakers had it figured out. So we're going to talk to Casey about all the things around the playoffs. And are the Warriors really title contenders without Steph Curry? I was in my office yesterday afternoon watching the game. And it was a nip and tuck, close, hard-fought game. Harden makes the shot at the end of the first quarter. They're right there. They're actually showing some interest in the game. Then the injury happens, and I look up, and all of a sudden, in the fourth quarter, the Warriors are just blowing them away without Steph Curry on the floor, just crushing them. So I don't know, do you have to have Steph Curry on the floor? San Antonio looks like the best team as usual. As much as people hate Greg Popovich, he can flat-out coach, and Kawhi Leonard, who, by the way, the Suns didn't pick because they wanted Markieff Morris, that one will go down forever. Kawhi Leonard's on the board. Nope, we're taking Keith. Got it. And Keith was actually courtside watching the Pistons game with his brother. There's a little too much brother stuff there with the Morrises. That's just me. So anyways, I watched the game, and with Steph Curry out, the MRI will come out this afternoon. Doesn't look good. Doesn't look good at all. The playoffs are somewhat compelling, but I wouldn't say over the top. I haven't found myself wanting to watch the Clippers and Blazers series yet. I could care less about Memphis, but it happened to be on yesterday, and they're all beat up. Don't really care about Atlanta, but I love watching Isaiah Thomas. Who was it? Reggie Miller had the best line on that. Who would have thought that Isaiah Thomas would be beloved by the people in Boston? Yes, the Isaiah Thomas that, oh, by the way, was here in Phoenix, and he's killing it. He's crushing it. Was just out of control on Friday night. So there's that's on my mind today, too. In terms of the Diamondbacks, I went to the game on Saturday night. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on from a fan's standpoint. I took my wife, took my youngest son and his buddy, and there were a couple of interesting instances from a fan's standpoint that could have gone really bad. I have to give Derek Hall and his team credit. Now, on the field, there's a few things here. So Wellington Castile already has 6 home runs. Who saw that coming? Shelby Miller plays in left field, and he actually looked better out there than he has on the mound. I shouldn't say that, but I just did. And who had Nick Ahmed getting thrown out in the 12th inning of a game? Nick Ahmed seems like the most mild-mannered guy. But the bottom line is they lose 2 of 3 to the stinking Pirates. Now, the Pirates are good. I shouldn't say stinking, but I see this team at home. I would like to think that they could get themselves on a bit of a run. And now they've got the Cardinals here. They've got St. Louis here, and you've got Greinke on the mound tonight. And both teams are right around 500. Greinke has pitched really well the last two starts. It's a Monday night start that I'm going to watch, that I'm totally in on tonight to see Greinke on the mound. Not thrilled that they're a 500 team, but maybe, Eric, you said it to me this morning, this is just how it's going to be. I don't want it to be just 500 all year long.
It seems as though this team has a lot more talent than a 500 team.
Not in the outfield.
No, not in the outfield, but we are almost through the first month of the season.
Yeah.
And the trends are continuing to pop up. When they're good, they're good. When they're bad, they're not good at all. So maybe this is going to be one of these roller coaster, lose 2 of 3, sweep a team, get swept, split. And in the NLS, I don't think that's going to be good enough. So,
St. Louis has won 14 of 15 here in Phoenix. They've just killed the Diamondbacks.
14 of 15 in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yikes.
They've won 14 of 15. And what was the other note I had on this?
It'll be a Cardinal home game. No one's going to want to hear that, but it will be a Cardinal home game.
Yeah. They've won 5 straight at Chase Field. Did you see the criticism directed towards Tom Brenneman, by the way, over the weekend?
No, I did not.
So, Tommy, the Reds just got beat on unmercifully by the Cubs.
I can see how this story is going to play out before you even tell it. But continue. Because he never really bit his tongue when he was with the Diamondbacks either. So.
Well, and it was like a ninth inning, and the Reds were just getting drilled again, losing by 7 or 8, something. And their fans chanting, "Let's go Cubbies." And Tom just couldn't hold himself back. He's like, "You know, we're here in Cincinnati. Your team's winning by 7. You should be a little classier than that." I mean, he just kind of went after him. And, of course, Deadspin picked up on it, a couple other websites.
Of course. Tom, yeah, I saw yesterday Anthony Rizzo hit a couple homers.
Yeah.
And the outfield was all blue with a little spattering of people wearing red.
Well, look, the story early in the season has been the Cubs. If we're just talking about, I think the Orioles are a really good story. Okay, Buck's got a nice team. I wouldn't want them. They're just a bunch of mashers. Any team that's got Mark Trumbo on it, that's 200 strikeouts coming your way. I think the White Sox are a good story early this season. If we think back to all the stuff that happened with Adam LaRoche and his son, the fact they almost didn't even go on the field and play a game, and now you look up and they're 13-6. I mean, they're really getting it done. The Cubs are 14-5, and Arrieta throwing another no-hitter. And the Reds just look awful to me. They're just an awful team.
And the Cubs really didn't hit very well the first few weeks of the season. So for them to be this good and now the bats seem to be waking up, that's pretty scary for the rest of the National League.
Well, the thing about the Diamondbacks, and we'll take a break. We'll have Casey Jacobson here in a minute, and then Paula will be with us, our Monday News and Notes. We'll talk more about I'm not going to do Tom Brady over and over and over here. I'm just we've talked, and we'll get into more of it, what it means. I think for you fans, it just means is it, you're thrilled that he's not going to be on the field. I am concerned about the Diamondbacks and their outfield defensively. Yasmani Tomas needs one of those pool baskets, right? You like get the leaves out of your pool. He needs one of those. And Chris Owings, the very first play of the game on Saturday night, the game that I'm at, he was doing helicopters out there. I mean, he was just going around and around and around and around and around. And their defense in the outfield, I think, as the season goes along. Look, it's 20 games in. It's a small sample size. And anybody that is going to just sit here and say all is well, it's not all well. Shelby Miller has been the biggest concern. And I tend to look at things in this way. I would like to have a team here that is competing for a title, not just something to do to pass some time. Thus, I'm not going to sit here behind this microphone every day and say all is well. No. They need some help defensively. That's come to my attention in just watching them in the outfield. Very happy with Castillo at the plate. Very happy with Segura in the field. Goldschmidt's going to figure it out. Jake Lamb's been really good. Greinke's been Greinke the last couple starts. Shelby Miller's not been good. Let's not sugarcoat this. And I think you guys know that. So, yeah, they're just hanging around right now. They're just a few games back of the Dodgers. 2.5 back, and they haven't played all that great. You know, they played well in San Francisco, but over the weekend, I think they're better than the Pirates. All right. Casey Jacobson is next. We're going to talk about the Lakers disaster and Steph Curry, some NBA, some college, and even a couple of Valley guys getting it done on the college end too at Stanford. That's next. I'm Brad Sismath. Good Monday. So much going on in the NBA. We figured let's get Casey Jacobson on board. I sent Eric a text last night because we like hearing from Casey. Of course, does some Suns broadcasts, Fox Sports 1, Pac-12 Networks, because there's some college stuff along with all the NBA as well. Okay, so right off the top, Casey, and thanks for coming on, are the Warriors title contenders without Steph Curry?
Yeah, they are still contenders, but Brad, they're not the favorite. That's clear. If Steph, and we don't know whether his knee injury is, you know, severe enough that he's going to be out for the rest of the playoffs or what, but they are still an elite team without Steph. And, you know, as long as they have Draymond Green and Klay Thompson healthy, I still believe that they could definitely contend, and I still want to see them play against the Spurs, even if that was without Steph Curry. I actually went and looked at some of the numbers for proof, because I wanted to know if I was going crazy in this. And without Steph Curry, the Warriors still would rank, if you just took them out of the lineup, they would rank as the eighth best, most efficient offense in the entire NBA. That's pretty good. 1.6 points per possession. And then on the defensive end, they would rank as the third best defensive team efficient-wise in the entire NBA behind the Spurs and the Atlanta Hawks. So to answer that question, they are still a darn good basketball team, but they wouldn't be the favorites in the West. That would go to the Spurs.
So you'd look for offense coming more out of Harrison Barnes and Iguodala, right? I mean, is there somebody you look at and say, well, you can't replace the MVP, but if you get 10 more out of these two players, you're close. Am I looking at that the right way?
Of course, yeah. So obviously, Steph Curry, he plays the point guard position. Not only is he one of the best and having one of the best seasons we've ever seen, but he is an exceptional shooter and passer. That combination is what makes Steph so good. All right, obviously, he can shoot it out to 30 feet. So without him, defenses are going to pack the paint a little bit. They're going to pay more attention to Klay Thompson. So Harrison Barnes has to be a guy that can create his own shot, be a one-on-one guy. Andre Iguodala doesn't have to change his game per se, but he has to do a little bit more of everything that he already does. And that includes hit a couple of threes. What I don't like to see is when Andre Iguodala hunts his three-point shot. When he takes open ones that are available off of a skip or a reverse pass, I'm fine with that, even if he misses those. What I don't like to see is the Warriors start to run offensive sets off of baseline screens to get Andre Iguodala three-point looks. I don't like that. Get him out in the open court and make him in the half court. He is a spot-up three-point shooter in the corner or the wing. Besides that, you got Leandro Barbosa and Sean Livingston, who can both kind of share the backcourt duties. Sean Livingston, to me, is one of the best, more underrated bench players in the entire NBA because of the nightmare matchup that he is. I mean, do you put? He's skinny, I know, but he's 6'7 or 6'8, and he can play in the post. He has a nice fadeaway jumper, so he creates a lot of problems. Everybody's got to step up, but Harrison Barnes, Livingston, Barbosa, they're all capable.
What about, we're talking with Casey Jacobson, what about this thought, Casey, that while Steve Kerr is going to get a lot of votes for Coach of the Year, even though some will say, well, Luke Walton was there early in the season, for him to go about designing this team without Steph Curry on the fly in the postseason, how much of an adjustment is that for Steve Kerr, or is it just a matter of plug and play with this team?
I think it's plug and play. I know it's crazy to say, because we're talking about maybe them playing without the MVP,
right,
and Steph Curry, but I think that Steve Kerr deserves a ton of credit, maybe all of the credit, for establishing a culture, Brad. That's what we're really talking about here. They have a culture, not just good players. Yes, do they have good players? Absolutely. But is this roster, like, overwhelmingly more talented than every other roster that you look at in the playoffs? I would say no. What they do well is they play both ends of the court. And, Brad, they care very much about each other, about making the extra pass, about playing to each other's strengths. And that might sound like an easy thing. Why doesn't everybody else do it? Why doesn't everybody else play like the Spurs and play like the Warriors? Because it's difficult in professional sports, because we're talking about huge contracts, big money, all about me. So if you're asking me if they can still get this done just by plugging in Sean Livingston, playing him more minutes, the answer is yes to a certain degree, because of the culture that is established there. There's no jealousy on that Warriors team. They're all about winning. Next man up.
Let's shift over to this thought, and that is, seeing the Cavaliers, I see the East, It's been all about the Cavaliers and the conversation about Cleveland. And yet there's times where I look at him, and I don't know if it's just Detroit plays a style. I look at Cleveland and say, yeah, Kyrie had a great game yesterday. I mean, a terrific game yesterday, but I still don't see them as a better team than even San Antonio. I see the power in the West so far through the early rounds of the playoffs. What about you?
Yeah, I see exactly what you're seeing, which is a Cavs team playing a scrappy Detroit team, but they only had one blowout win.
Right.
The rest, the three, it was a sweep, but three of those games were single-digit wins for the Cavs, many of which came down to the last final one or two possessions of the game. And what you're alluding to is, you know, watching Kyrie Irving a couple of times, he had a half-court shot in that game. He had one possession where I think he literally dribbled 25 times, Brad, and then hit a fall-away three-point shot from the wing in front of the Detroit bench. And, yeah, it was a great play, but what you're saying is, can that beat a Spurs team? Can that kind of basketball beat a Warriors team in the finals? And the answer is no. We actually saw that last year, even though Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love were both out of that series for most of the time. The Cavs are still trying to search for that culture that I mentioned with the Warriors. They are much more of a one-on-one, clear it out, watch me go, LeBron's turn, then Kyrie Irving's turn, then J.R. Smith's turn. That's not how the Warriors play. That's not how the Spurs play. So that's what I understand what you're saying there. But the Cavs will not be tested in the East. So it's going to be really interesting. They have from now until the finals to try and figure that out a little bit. How are they going to utilize Kevin Love and get Kyrie Irving to, yeah, take over games when he can, but also be a facilitator?
All right, let's bounce over on the coaching search. So the Lakers fire Byron Scott, and this morning I've heard Kevin Ollie, I've heard Luke Walton, I've heard Derek Fisher. Thibodeau's out, Brooks is out. I guess I'm wondering about the timing of all of this. If you knew you were going to bounce Byron Scott, why didn't you do it so you'd have a shot at Thibodeau, or you'd have a shot at Scott Brooks, which may lead to Kevin Durant or may not? I don't know. But isn't it odd, the timing of letting Byron Scott go?
It's odd, and I'll go a step further. It was really idiotic of the Los Angeles Lakers to wait this long. It really is. You know, I played for Byron Scott in 2005 when I was a member of the New Orleans Hornets. He was a bad fit. Byron Scott went 38-126. Okay, that's not good. I don't care if you're coaching the Sixers or the Lakers or the Spurs. That's not good. And obviously, Byron Scott was just kind of a caretaker for Kobe Bryant's retirement tour. But if you're the Lakers, and obviously you fired him because you don't think he's good enough to guide your young players, D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, and Jordan Clarkson, why did it take you this long?
Right,
are you kidding me? We've watched this for 2 years. This team needs a fresh start. Those three young players that I mentioned need a fresh start. The Lakers, Brad, were in the top, or excuse me, the bottom three in defense, overall defense, the last couple of seasons. And Tom Thibodeau would have been interested. I mean, he definitely would have been interested. Now, they say that the Lakers were not willing to give him organizational control. Like, they would have just hired him to be a head coach. They wouldn't have allowed him to be a president or a GM as well. But still, it's the Lakers. I think he would have thought long and hard about that. And the Lakers need somebody to come in and change that culture and be more defensive-minded. So I don't know where they're going to go next. You mentioned a couple of guys. Luke Walton, I think, is interesting, although he's never been a head coach before. But he would be a much better guy to help guide these young players and get them to understand that it's not about right now wins and losses for the Lakers. It's about building a future, which is something that Byron Scott really felt like never really wrapped his arms around.
It's amazing how a franchise that was once so proud can be so dysfunctional. Just sitting here from the outside looking in and saying, really, you guys are... I mean, Luke Walton had Steve Kerr sitting in the locker room when Kerr couldn't coach back in November. So Steve, in all intents and purposes, was there helping Luke through it, which is fine. Derek Fisher, that's a retread, but it's a Laker. Kevin Ollie, he won it in college. None of these would get L.A. excited. And it's at a period, Casey, and I may be taking this too far, it's at a period of time where if the Lakers don't wise up on this, with the NFL now coming back into the L.A. market, they're going to lose people. And so there's some business going on here that just doesn't make sense at all for a franchise that had it all figured out.
Well, I would actually disagree with the fact that they would lose business. I am just, I am amazed. I live in Southern California.
I know.
Born and raised in Los Angeles. People are so diehard LA. I mean, they can't even see straight. I think that this organization has built up more equity than any sports franchise that I could think of. They could be awful, Brad, and I mean awful.
They are awful.
5 years, and people would still go to the Staples Center. I'm telling you, people love, absolutely love their Lakers. They have a lot going for them, and you know, what you're talking about is organizational from the top down.
Yeah.
All right. So you can't win without players. But I'd argue that you can't win without quality ownership that is on the same page. After Dr. Jerry Buss passed away several years ago, this Laker organization has been lost in the wilderness, and they've had some pretty solid rosters. But if you are not on the same page with your head coach, your players, and your front office, you are going nowhere, especially if you play in the Western Conference of the National Basketball Association.
All right, before we get you out of here, let's put some college stuff together. There's up at Stanford, they just made a coaching change, and you, of course, a Stanford alum, and there's a couple players from the Valley, Dorian Pickens and Humphrey, that are there. They're also recruiting Alex Barcelo very hard. What do you make out of the Pac-12, and where's Stanford at with those two local kids? Just give me a little bit about them.
I've really enjoyed watching Dorian Pickens and Michael Humphreys this year grow, and what I'll say about that, Brad, is this. The most important year of your college career is from your freshman to your sophomore year. It's where you grow the most. Every freshman, even the elite freshmen, don't have a clue about what's going on. They've never had they've never eaten healthy before. They've never had time management problems where they have to go to class and they have demands on being in practice on time and a weight program. So your head's spinning your freshman year. The sophomore year is where you see the most growth, and that's where we saw from Dorian Pickens. He's actually the largest. He had the largest increase in points per game from last year to this year of any player in the entire Pac-12. Mm. He averaged 2 points a game as a freshman. This past year, he averaged 12.3, so he increased it by 10 points per game. But here's my thing with Dorian, Brad, and I'll say this. I like him as a player, but his best attribute is his ability to shoot the three, right? Well, he's only 36% his freshman year and his sophomore year from three. If he is going to be a great shooter, he's got to be more consistent, take better looks. If he doesn't shoot more than 40% from three-point land next year, I'll be very surprised. And then Michael Humphrey is a guy that Stanford needs, a rebounder, a shot blocker. He needs to get stronger, but I like what I saw from him, especially towards the end of the year. Now, Stanford, to me, best-case scenario next year is they finish fifth or sixth. They just, I think next year, although the Pac-12 is not as deep as they were this year, they're better at the top. UCLA is going to make a big jump. Arizona is going to be awesome, although young with their talent. Oregon State's coming back up again as well. So Stanford is going to be on the outside looking in of the tournament, in my opinion, as it sits right now. But they do have some young players, and their new head coach, Jared Haas, is promising that they will have a more aggressive attacking offensive style, something that they did not have under Johnny Dawkins.
That's good stuff there. I appreciate your time and insight as always, Casey. Thanks.
Thank you, Brad. See you.
It was good to catch up with you, Casey Jacobson, there. You can go through I could have done another 15 minutes easy with him on things around the college and pro front. It's just a wealth of information. He's plugged in. He's one of those guys, I call you hoopaholics. You know who we are. We see ball. It doesn't matter if it's high school, college, pro. I'm coaching back at youth level again and seeing some stuff. Some players come along that you know in a couple of years are going to be on radars. It's fun. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. If you haven't heard the story of the day, Tom Brady. The suspension is back in, so he's going to miss the Cardinal game, at least as it stands today. I'm not blowing this thing up because it is April 25th, and I've learned one thing in sports, just when everything looks certain, it's not. So we're back with more after this timeout.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories, it's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sesmat.
Always good to catch up with Paula Bovin, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. During the break, I saw where Donald Trump, we're going to start there, Paula, opening up a rally in Rhode Island today by yelling at the top of his lungs, leave Tom Brady alone. Of course he did. So now that Tom Brady is back into the news cycle and that the suspension has been reinstated, what are your thoughts on Tom Brady and the news cycle now that he's back in play?
I think it's a huge story in the sense of obviously the Cardinals and the fact that he might not be available to play against the Cardinals. You know, this is such an obvious statement, but there's 16 games in a regular season. These all matter. You know, getting to play the Patriots without Tom Brady, I know people like to say, oh, we want to play the team at their best. Well, I'm telling you, in the NFL, if you can help yourself to get a victory, you're in great shape. So that's my reaction, Brad.
Okay, and I'm one of those that says, oh, I want to play the team at full strength. I don't want to see Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah. Now, I can't help. There's a few things here. NBC does not schedule this game if they know that this is coming. So NBC,
right.
There's no way that they'd say, well, we don't want Brady out there. We want Jimmy Garoppolo for the sake of ratings to lead off our year. That's one. Two, it's April 25th. It's Monday morning when this is announced. Clearly, the NFL just didn't wake up this morning and said, let's announce the Brady suspension. This is all calculated to control the news cycle. That's fine. That's what they want to do. This is me talking. I'm not putting words in your mouth. You can beat me over the head if you disagree. And third, it is April 25th, so get back to me around August 25th and see if this is still standing. Today, yeah, it's a big deal for the Cardinals because you should win.
Yeah, the whole sort of news cycle thing and them controlling it, I agree. But I know how it is at AV Central, and if we write something about the Cardinals and the NFL, it does great on our website. So I just think that people are hungry for NFL news around the clock. The NFL sees a great opportunity to keep their name in the news. And again, it's significant. Now, I agree with you. Things change, and they have changed at a rapid and ridiculous pace with this Brady. So who knows if it's going to be the same story in August. But I think the signs are at least pretty good, and I think Cardinals fans should be excited. And I am not from, if I'm a fan, I'm not from the book. I want to see the best team. It's for the Cardinals, the goal is to win the Super Bowl, to get to the Super Bowl.
Sure.
This helps their chances.
There's no question. There's no question. All right, so the draft is this Thursday night. What do you think, what do you want to see the Cardinals do? That's the better question. What do you want to see them do?
Well, you know, I think they have to take this quarterback thing seriously, Brad, and I don't see them necessarily doing it Thursday. I don't see them doing it in the first round, but I wouldn't have a problem if they did, if they feel like they're landing on somebody or they're getting a good opportunity, if not the first and early on. I think they need to address this issue, and I don't know. And the issue we're talking is starting to get a quarterback ready. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they feel like this is something they can address with free agency. I would love to them to get a quarterback in with that they can start getting ready to be a replacement for Carson Palmer. And I have not gotten the sense that that's what they're going to do. They have been very good about keeping what they're doing to themselves. As we know, Brad, with the draft, there's a bunch of nonsense being thrown out there.
Sure.
Some teams throwing stuff out on purpose, agents throwing things out. So I have no clue, but I hope early on that this team addresses the backup quarterback situation.
So I don't think that they can find another team that just has no clue like the Raiders were back when they suckered them into Carson Palmer. And
right. And
before that happened, this was a wasteland of quarterbacks, and they missed on Matt Leinart. So from a drafting standpoint, they missed on Logan Thomas. So the basic track record would say you have to go all the way back to Jake Plummer, right, before you found a quarterback that could come in here and play. That doesn't mean that they can't do it now. I trust Tom Moore. I do, Bruce and Steve Keim, but I take Tom Moore's input greatly on this one because he is so good at what he does. Do I think that Matt Ryan is going to be the guy here in a year or two? I actually do think that that's the more likely scenario, is somebody like that or that guy coming here rather than getting a draft pick. If it's me, I take the center from Alabama, Kelly, and I call it a day. I don't know if he's going to be there for them now that the Redskins – went up in the draft went up and got Josh Norman. But that's just me. I'd be boring and bland and take a center.
Well, I don't think that's boring and bland at all, Brad, because it certainly addresses a need and the reviews on this kid have been great. So that's a smart move. You know, I'm not saying you have to go first round with a quarterback. I think you need to seriously look at, you know, the Cardale Jones types of players and give that some thought. But gosh, if they go with the center, I'm all for that. You know, the reviews are great. It's a position of need, and it's something that could help them pretty darn quick, I think.
So they did interview Paxton Lynch. I'm bringing him up just as in this regard. Steve Keim has shown the ability to go out and navigate big deals, the latest one being the Chandler Jones thing. So
right.
I know you have a lot that you would have to do in order to move up to get him. But you also have to look at it and say, if this is not the year of the quarterback, because I'll talk to scouts or agents and all that stuff, and they'll say some years you look at it and say, you know what? Next year, Deshaun Watson at Clemson is 10 times better than any of these guys, so we're going to stay out of the quarterback market. I agree with you, Paula, in the thought of you got to address the quarterback thing. But I don't think that you have to go down that path if you look at somebody and say, or a few guys and say, I could take Christian Hackenberg here this year, or I could mm-hmm. go next season and go after fill in the blank. And I really think that's a smart move on the Cardinals' part, if that's the way they're going to go on the draft. That said, could I see him trading up? They brought Paxton Lynch in, Lee Steinberg's his agent. I know Lee well. Do I think there's some interest there? It's Lee drumming up business. But I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't sit here and say, oh my gosh, they traded up and got Paxton Lynch. I wouldn't be surprised by that. I really wouldn't.
No, I agree. You know, with this group, I think anything is possible. Mm-hmm. They surprised us with some situations in the past. And you're right, it is really interesting. There have been so few misses with this current administration, but there certainly was with Logan Thomas. You know, I mean, that was one of their glaring ones in the draft. And I'm also, you know, I know, and they didn't spend a super high pick on it, but you really sense that they felt they could fix him, and it didn't happen. So it's another sort of storyline with this whole quarterback situation that fascinates me.
Well, it's really one last thought on this. It's really interesting to me that, A, it doesn't matter what Carson does during the regular season. It doesn't. If he can't win a playoff game, that's how fans are going to judge him. And that may sound really harsh, but that's where we are with Carson Palmer in Arizona. And so there's that backdrop. Then there's his career is winding down. He has not shown that he is Tom Brady when it comes to postseason or Peyton Manning or Cam Newton. I'm not being critical of him. Right. It's just a fact. So,
sure.
So bringing in somebody to say, let's develop them. I'll give you New Orleans as an example. So you're hearing all about the Saints maybe being a landing spot for Paxton Lynch. He can learn behind Drew Brees. I don't know if Drew Brees is going to be a great mentor to him or not. I don't know if Carson Palmer would be a great mentor. I'm not saying that negatively. It's just Carson's got to worry about, hey, man, my legacy's on the line here. So does it make sense to bring in a young quarterback? Or if you bring in a veteran guy and stick him behind, I think the message you send to the rest of this roster, in Drew Stanton and Matt Barkley, is you guys just aren't that good. And that doesn't feel to me like a Kyme Arians type of deal.
No, it's interesting. I'm looking at ESPN right now. I saw that Sam Bradford's requesting a trade from the Eagles. So it sounds like there's a lot of movement that could be happening quarterback-wise this offseason. You know what? As far as sort of mentoring, I think actually Palmer would be terrific. It doesn't mean you spend every minute of the guy, but it means you watch how a guy operates. And he obviously was mentored to a lot of guys, the John Browns on this team. Not necessarily mm-hmm. quarterbacks, but guys he worked with in the offseason and took under his wing. And Palmer, as much as any other season, and people have talked about it, the way he prepared last offseason and this offseason, I think, is a great thing for a young quarterback to see. And for a guy who's been in different offenses, who is a leader, you know, isn't as vocal as some might think, but I think just his leadership skills on how he operates. I have no problem with that kind of him serving that kind of role with the type of person he will bring in. So it's going to be, I think this is going to be a fun week as far as what the Cardinals do, because they're being so mysterious about it.
Yeah. All right, so the baseball team is .500. Greinke throws tonight. I saw today where St. Louis has won 14 of 15 here in Arizona. Four-game series, lose 2 of 3 to the Pirates. What do you make out of them so far?
Well, you know, not to sound like Denny Green, but they are who some of us thought they were. I mean,
Wow. Cindy, you.
Well, there were a lot. I mean, even national media wasn't. They weren't picking the Diamondbacks to win their division. You know, there were some issues. I will say, I'm probably a little more encouraged than I've heard some people. I mean, I think their offense has, for the most part, been impressive. Obviously, I think they choked twice yesterday with a guy on third and, what, fewer than two outs. I think a couple times they could have won this thing. But the bats are clearly coming around. And Goldie, you know, the two homers, I know he's mad about his defense, but, my gosh, he's not going to keep hitting 243 or whatever it is. And Greinke has started to look better. So I think their trajectory is on the upswing. You know, I don't know if they'll sort this Shelby Miller situation out, and I know there's been mechanical issues and things like that with them, but to me the trajectory is sort of going in the right direction, and at this point of the season, even if you are 500, I think that's encouraging. So I know some people are panicking. I think it's certainly too early for that.
No. Their outfield defense is not good. That's
no,
and
no.
Shelby Miller, that's a concern. It's in center and left, and Shelby Miller obviously is a huge concern. Anybody who says it's not is just fooling themselves. So,
right, of course.
Yeah, appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
See ya. There's Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. A few other things on my mind on the other side. We'll get to, I want to circle back on the Lakers because it's just fun pounding on them. I'm getting beat up by Laker fans. Oh, the horror of it all. Brad's beating up on the Lakers. Yeah, like they've done anything smart here in the offseason. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismath. Time is short here. So on the Brady situation, Roger Goodell is now back in the saddle showing I am in charge here. This is what I am all about. And going after Tom Brady, from my point of view, is it's foolish that the league is so caught up in one guy. It's foolish it's gone on this far, but it's going to continue. And this is all about the commissioner saying, I am the guy in charge. These owners have put me in charge. And I'm not going to let anybody get over on me. I'm going to smile. I'm going to be very calm and collected. But behind the scenes, I am just going to rip your heart out. If you don't follow what we're all about, I'm going to rip your heart out. It's really too bad Tom Brady's not going to play against the Cardinals. Yeah, but again, it's April 25th, and let's just get back to me around August 25th, and let's see what happens. There'll be a lot of twists and turns on this. In the court, not on the football field. The Lakers are just... They were a once proud franchise, very proud franchise. All the trophies and great names and Laker fast break and this and that. And you see them now and they're just a team. They're just another brand that's out there. They're just Walmart. It's crazy how a franchise that had everything going has every single way to convince players to come to L.A., it's crazy that the team is all tied up in an owner that just doesn't get it. And I've said it many times through the years that most sports owners are crazy. Most sports owners are nuts. Most of them don't know what they're doing. Most of them think they can run sports just like it's anything else. Some of them will even go as far as to say, we can't trade this player because we will lose attendance in our lower bowl. And this will sit and watch a player who's well past his prime, who is very, very good. And it's happened right here in Phoenix. You know, Steve Nash. People that were there that left, even some people are still around. They didn't want to move him because they didn't want to lose lower bowl. They didn't want to lose TV ratings. When you have players at the end of their career, and this was a no-win situation back on the Lakers for Byron Scott. It was a no-win. This was Kobe's goodbye, and everything was about Kobe. And Kobe could shoot as many shots as he wanted to. It was fine. The team blew. He didn't have respect for the new guys coming in. So this whole year was a wash. But now they don't even know how to get rid of a coach the right way. Like the day after it happens, thanks, Kobe. Byron, you're done. Let's go get Tom Thibodeau. Let's go get Scott Brooks. And maybe we have a shot at Kevin Durant. But no. We're going to sit here 2 weeks into the playoffs after Thibodeau and Brooks are already gone. Unless there's a name out there that just within the last week or so, or maybe even the last few days, said to the Lakers, you know what? I'd jump. That's crazy to operate a business like that. But again, it does. It's not as simple as it seems with some of these franchises that look like they've got everything going for them, but they continue just to spin around and spin around and spin around. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.